Good mornings, I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, after promising to enact significant pieces of his agenda on day one, the new president did not disappoint. Congressman Bob Latta reflects on the busy first week of Donald Trump's second term. Also this morning, more used EVs are hitting the market, putting electric vehicles within reach of more buyers. But are those buyers interested? We get our high school basketball preview. It's been a rough season for the Trojans. The road doesn't get any easier tonight against Perrysburg. And another collection of recipes from Kyra's Kitchen. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Friday, January 24th, 2025. Somebody call Nicolas Cage. A rare copy, I don't know if you heard about this, a rare copy of the Declaration of Independence is up for sale and expected to fetch as much as $4 million at auction. This copy from July 1776, one of the original copies of the Declaration of Independence, was printed to help spread the document to the public. And it is one of only 10 known to be in existence today. And most of the existing copies are in existing collections, private or public collections. This particular copy was printed in New Hampshire and will go up for, I don't know when it's, it just says it's going to go up for auction, expected to fetch as much as $4 million. Doesn't say where it will be sold or when exactly. But I'm wondering, has anyone looked at the back for hidden map, secret treasure? And all that, But they call Nicolas Cage. Declaration of Independence going up for sale. So this is one of the big stories among the first things you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. Spirit Airlines, which is long been one of those deep discount carriers, you know, the bare bones carriers where you can fly across the country for like $49 and then they nickel and dime you for everything else. But a lot of people of modest means will fly Spirit Airlines. I recently flew Spirit and I didn't have any issues. But the thing with Spirit Airlines is that if you are the cheapest out there, you're going to generally attract a certain clientele that other airlines don't necessarily have to deal with. I don't, mean to, make any disparaging stereotypes, but, there are people who will fly Spirit that won't fly other airlines because they're much more expensive and thus exclusive. So Spirit Airlines, to deal with these individuals, are implementing new rules for passengers, saying that you have to wear shoes and you cannot and you have to be adequately clothed in order to fly, in order to board their planes. The budget airline is implementing rules for passengers regarding offensive or sheer clothing. And that's not all. Offensive tattoos are also going to be prohibited. I would guess that if you have any offensive tattoos, they have to be covered. I mean, they're not going to make you go out and get your tattoo removed necessarily. You just have to cover it up. Spirit updated their contract of carriage, saying that all passengers, it says passengers will not be allowed to board or asked to leave if they have body art that is lewd, obscene, or offensive in nature. And also, passengers who are inadequately clothed will be kept from boarding. Inadequately clothed. They define that as any see-through clothing, exposed breasts, buttocks, or other private parts, and any individual who is not adequately covered. See, again, I don't think let's say, Emirates Airlines has to necessarily worry about these individuals. They're not flying that airline. They're probably not flying Delta or United. But Spirit, yeah, that's gotta watch out. let's see. What else is going on among the first things you need to... I mean, that's playing into every stereotype about every person who flies Spirit Airlines. You know, that's... let's see. Elsewhere among the first things you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. Are you one of those weirdos that gets up first thing in the morning and does your morning workout, get your workout in before you... You know, just get up and get going for the day. If you find that you are hungry after your workout, whether it's in the morning, first thing in the morning, or maybe you're skipping your lunch hour to go work out. Some people do that. That could be why you're hungry. But this is interesting research from the University of Virginia. If you find you are hungry after a workout, you might want to exercise harder. This study found that high-intensity exercise can actually suppress your appetite, while conversely, moderate-intensity workouts may actually fuel your hunger. So, moderate intensity makes you hungrier. High-intensity exercise suppresses that hunger. Interesting. Researchers examined the impact of different workout intensities and found the intensities could impact the appetite hormone ghrelin. Is that right? Ghrelin? Lead author of the study, Kara Anderson, said we found that individuals felt less hungry after high-intensity exercise compared to moderate exercise. High-intensity exercise may be important for appetite suppression, and if you are exercising as part of a weight loss regimen, high-intensity exercise suppressing your appetite may actually be particularly useful as part of a weight loss program, they say. So it's kind of interesting. Here's another new study that I think is... something that will parents will want to take note of. Parents of kids. A new study finds smartphones could be making teenagers more aggressive and causing hallucinations even. What's this you say? This is a study from the nonprofit organization Sapien Labs. Found that the younger a person is when they start using a smartphone, the more likely they are to develop psychological problems. A majority of teens said that they had feelings of hopelessness, guilt, anxiety, and unwanted strange thoughts. It's interesting the wording on that. Unwanted strange thoughts. The study... also found that the problems are more common with girls than they are boys. But, yeah, more aggressive behavior and even hallucinations. Your teens in cell phones. As if we didn't have enough reason to keep our kids off their devices already. It could be hallucinating. Wow. That's a little scary. That's one of those doom and gloom stories. Every day there's got to be a doom and gloom story in the news. You know, world coming to an end. What is society coming to? Hand-wringing type of story. And that is definitely one of those. The doom and gloom story of the day. Smartphones could be making your teens more aggressive and causing hallucinations. Crazy. And lastly, here among the first things you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day... BabyCenter.com is out with their list of the most popular baby names of 2024, along with the names that are going out of style. So if you are expecting, you might want to take note. This is a site, BabyCenter.com, that compiles data after parents register the names of their little ones, and they have spotted some trends. Royal names like Catherine, Anne, Philip, Albert, Edward, you know, after names that are popular, the British royal family, royal names, appear to be on the way out, as are male names that end in Aiden. Caden, Jaden, you know, Aiden names for boys. Let's see here. Also fading into history, holdovers from the 80s and 90s. Names like Jamie, Aaron, Kelsey, Chelsea, Kendra, Alexis, and Taylor are all becoming less and less popular. Let's see here. Names like Ellie and Liam finished in the top 10 for 2024, but let's see here. Other popular names from just the past year seem to be waning in popularity. Liv, Billy, Katie, Danny, and Andy. Overall, girls named Jamie, Katie, Remy, Liv, and Analia. Analia? Those names decreased the most last year. While we also seem to be saying farewell to boys known as Jamal, Esteban, Cannon, Emery, and Taylor. So those are the names. You know, it's one thing to tell you what the most popular names are. These are telling you which names are waning in popularity. I guess if you give your kids any of those names, you're instantly dating them, making them, you know, seem outdated. They're not hip with the times, I guess. I don't know. Anyway, there you go. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Friday morning started.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchek. Your WTOL 11 weather, partly to mostly sunny today with a high around 20, partly cloudy tonight, a low around 10, but it'll feel colder with the wind chill. The Hancock County Sheriff's Office said a man with several active warrants led deputies on a lengthy chase before finally giving up. The driver failed to stop and started a pursuit with deputies on Blanchard Avenue near 6th Street in Findlay. The pursuit made its way to State Route 15 and then U.S. 23 into Wyandotte County before the man finally stopped his vehicle and got out and was placed into custody. The pursuit spanned 28 miles and reached speeds of 115 miles an hour. The man had several warrants out of central Ohio, including failing to appear for an abduction and receiving stolen property. He was booked at the Hancock County Jail on fresh charges of failure to comply and driving under suspension. Get more in the story on our website. About a dozen people are displaced after a fire caused significant damage to an apartment complex in Tiffin.
A fire ignited the University Center apartments on East Market Street in Tiffin. Flames forced neighbors out of their homes and into the cold. And at least a dozen people are now left without a place to call home. One neighbor was thankful to get a helping hand after escaping the blaze.
I'm glad that they opened up the office and provided heated blankets for, you know, everybody.
According to the Tiffin Fire Rescue Division Chief, more than 30 firefighters from various agencies helped for hours.
WTOL 11's Dominique O'Neill reporting. Blanchard Valley Health System says Corporate Compliance Officer Kimberly Thomas has been named the 2024 Compliance Officer of the Year by Healthicity. BVHS says this prestigious award celebrates healthcare compliance professionals who go above and beyond to foster safer, more compliant practices across the industry. BVHS President and CEO Myron Lewis says Kim provides valuable guidance to BVHS leadership, and this national honor reflects how she continually goes above and beyond to make BVHS a stronger organization. Get more on this award and this story on our website. Remember, you can always get more news online anytime at WFIN.com.
So our cover story this morning: after promising to enact significant pieces of his agenda on day one, the new president did not disappoint. Congressman Bob Latta is with us this morning to talk about this busy first week of Donald Trump's second term. Congressman, thanks very much for taking the time this morning. We appreciate it.
Chris, thanks very much for having me on.
So, a flurry of executive orders in this first week of President Trump's second term, covering immigration, DEI initiatives, energy policy, the list goes on and on and on. What among those in your mind are the most significant, will have the most significant impact?
Well, you know, what we all talked about in the last 4 years is the lack of an energy policy in this country by the Biden administration, the Democrats, and also not protecting our southern border. So I think that what the American people are seeing is the president reversing a lot of what Biden had done really hurt American energy production. And at the same time, making sure we can secure that southern border and protect Americans from violent criminals that have crossed that border. And so right off the bat, when the president was signing those executive orders and putting the orders out to Homeland Security and Customs and Border Patrol, Americans seeing the results right off the bat.
A couple of those executive orders that generated the most headlines, one of them being the nearly blanket pardon for all of those individuals who were facing charges or had been convicted of charges surrounding the events of January 6th 4 years ago. Including individuals who were convicted of violence against police officers. And that really was over the objections of many in law enforcement who were concerned over the message that sent. Did the president go too far in with his pardoning of the January 6th participants?
Well, if you go just a week ago when asked our now Vice President J.D. Vance what he thought, and he did not think that, pardoning people that committed violence against police officers was the right thing. I agree with him. When I was in the Ohio legislature for 11 years, I chaired Judiciary Committee and the Ohio Senate, criminal in the House, and we did everything we possibly could to make sure that our law enforcement had the protections out there. So if it would have been me, I would not have pardoned anybody that did violence against a police officer.
The other executive order that generated a lot of headlines, continues to generate a lot of headlines, and has led to almost immediate legal action, was the order ending birthright citizenship in this country, which, of course, is part of the Constitution. So it seems pretty clear that the president overstepped with that executive order, and it's going to make its way through the courts. But is that something that legislatively should be on the agenda to perhaps look at amending the Constitution to clarify birthright citizenship?
Well, if you go to the 14th Amendment, there's six words in there that I think that are going to have to be determined by the United States Supreme Court as to exactly who is, because if it's like, what happens if your parents are diplomats in this country and you're born here, does that give you that right? So I really think it's going to come down to the U.S. Supreme Court's going to have to rule on that under the 14th Amendment. To get a constitutional amendment, I think it would be impossible. And the reason for that is, you know, when you have to have two-thirds of the House, two-thirds of the Senate to move it to the states for three-fourths for ratification, I just don't see that happening. So I think that the immediate course will be through the courts and then ultimately the United States Supreme Court hearing that case.
As we mentioned, this first week of the Trump presidency really has been dominated by these executive orders and trying to implement as much of his policy as possible in that manner. But obviously, not all of it is going to be able to be implemented through executive order. And there has been a lot of discussion about the best way to formally enact those policies, that policy agenda, through legislation in Congress, whether this should be or can be done with one big sweeping bill or whether it needs to be broken down into two or more smaller bills. The Speaker has weighed in on that, favoring at least two bills. What say you? What is the best course of action in terms of moving the president's agenda forward?
Well, there's what we have, budget reconciliation, and under that provision that's from a 1974 law says that you can move through after you get a budget, and then it goes to the respective committees to figure out how much needs to be cut, et cetera. Because again, you know, we're looking at paying over $1 trillion this year to pay our interest just on the debt.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the number two item now, right behind Social Security. So this is how bad it's gotten when you're looking at $36 trillion. And I look at the interest rates every morning, and the 10-year Treasury now is at 4.6%. So that's costing the American taxpayers trillions now into the future. So what, under budget reconciliation, you know, the question is, there's the tax provisions, because at the end of this year, the 2017 tax provisions that got our economy moving at the best in the world all expire.
Mm-hmm.
And so Americans next year will have a massive tax increase when they have to pay Uncle Sam. So there's that provision. We have provisions in the Energy and Commerce Committee dealing with telecommunications, because there's about $70 billion that we haven't been able to collect because of no auction authority. We're looking at what we can do on clawing back on the energy side of all of these different Green New Deal things that Biden and the Democrats have wanted. And then finally, on the healthcare side, especially, you know, there's different things that, like work requirements for people that receive Medicaid and things like that. But the question then is do you do it separately in one bill or two? I favor a one bill, because our problem is this. Starting this Congress, we had 220 Republicans. Gates resigned from Florida, so that takes us to 219.
Mm-hmm.
We have two people going into the administration, that takes us to 217. And so we probably won't see any elections until mid-April till maybe to June to fill these seats. So they have a 217 to 215 majority.
Yeah.
Doesn't give you any wiggle room. And I don't think that, you know, and we have a lot of different opinions around this place on our side. And I really think that to try to say we're going to try to do this twice would be just about impossible. So I think one bill, get it done, and get it to the president's desk.
As we mentioned, I want to look back on this first week of the Donald Trump presidency, and we talked about the executive orders and looking ahead to the legislative strategy to enact the full agenda. What are you most excited about, just given what has happened in this first week, looking ahead to the next 4 years?
Well, you know, I think right off the bat, there's a different feeling around the country, that people are, you know, having a more positive view. I think that, you know, when you think about having over 10 million people cross our border illegally and, you know, and enforcing the law is going to be very important. Again, having an energy policy, because again, the United States on any given day in oil production can outproduce Saudi Arabia or Russia.
Mm-hmm.
We're now the number one producer of natural gas in the world. We're going to have, you know, by the end of this year, I serve as the Energy Subcommittee Chairman on Energy and Commerce. By the end of this year, just because of all of the new data centers going online around the country, we're going to be using between 4.5 to up to maybe 8% more power on top of what we're already generating, and we're not generating enough power. So for the United States to lead, we've got to have that power, and we've got to have the energy. So President Trump understands that. So I think that that really excites a lot of us, is just that we're moving again.
Again, Congressman Bob Latta with us this morning. It is just the first week of the second term of President Donald Trump, and it has been a very eventful one already. We look forward to many more conversations over the coming 4 years with respect to the Trump policies and the Trump agenda. And Congressman, thanks very much for taking the time this morning. We appreciate it.
Well, thank you very much. Have a great day.
stories we were talking about with Congressman Latta just a few moments ago. With Donald Trump back in the White House, it is already pretty clear that America's energy policy, easy for me to say, has shifted away from an emphasis on renewables and things like electric powered vehicles. But the demand for EVs isn't going away. They are still popular among a significant segment of vehicle owners. And with the prices coming down on used models, they are attracting the EV curious as well. But there is still the intimidation factor stemming from a knowledge gap. New survey from Kelley Blue Book found that more than half of U.S. adults, 52%, feel that their lack of knowledge about battery technology makes them hesitant or reluctant to purchase a used EV. And some of that stems from connected to the kind of weather that we have experienced over the past week or so. So there is that as well. Joining us this morning is KBB Executive Editor Brian Moody. Brian, how do Americans feel about buying used electric vehicles? Are some of the misperceptions or misunderstandings about the batteries and battery technology, is that the only thing holding people back, or there are other factors as well?
Well, there's other factors. I would say the main thing, the main two things would be the battery health or the life of the battery, and also where to charge. Those are the big ones.
Yeah.
I think that if the average American drove an electric car, they would like it. But that doesn't solve other problems like the price, where to charge up, and concerns about the health of the battery or the longevity of the battery. One thing to keep in mind when buying a new or a used electric car, just like a gasoline-powered car, the new car warranty follows to the second owner, mm-hmm. or even the third owner, if it's still applicable. Most electric cars today have a warranty on the battery and the drive components for at least 8 years or 100,000 miles.
Yeah.
So that's something to keep in mind when considering buying a used electric car.
You know, one of the things, too, that makes buying a used electric vehicle kind of unique versus the traditional used vehicle purchasing experience is that mileage is less important than it is on traditional gas-powered vehicles. Explain why that is.
Well, because how the previous owner charged the battery, how they cared for it, if they followed the instructions, can lead to longevity or not.
Yeah.
So just like a gasoline-powered car, if the previous owner never changed the oil, but the car only has 40,000 miles on it, that's not going to be a great car.
Right.
Same with an electric car. If the previous owner charged the battery up fast, charged frequently, plugged it in every time they got home, let it run down to zero all the time, charged it up to 100 all the time, that's going to be a car that likely won't have as much longevity in terms of the battery. And even if it is covered under warranty, it's still going to be inconvenient to you. So one of the things that you can do is when shopping for an electric car, if you use Auto Trader, they actually have a score that will give each car, like this car, not all cars like this, this one specific car has excellent battery health, or it has good battery health, or it has fair battery health. And you can know that before you even go look at the car. So it is the kind of thing that people are leery of because it's been hidden. Now we're starting to get the tools to see a little bit more insight into how that car is going to last.
Yeah, that was actually what I was going to ask, because, you know, again, with the traditional gas-powered vehicles, you're looking at mileage as being an important factor. It's easy to find. Look at the odometer, but the dashboard, right. The dashboard of an EV can tell you how charged the battery is at that moment, but battery health is a much different animal.
Yeah, you can usually find it inside the car's computer. But it's going to take a minute. If you were going to look for a battery powered car and you wanted to see the car's onboard computer, how much battery life it had left, I would watch a YouTube video ahead of time, how to do that.
Yeah.
Just for the heck of it. But also, like I said, you use Auto Trader. You can see it's listed
easy.
Right there next to the car. You know, yeah, that makes it easy. You could, if it doesn't have any of those things, you could also ask the dealer, like, hey, would you be able to show me something that would indicate how much battery life this car has left? And oftentimes, just like the high mileage cars or just like the cars with a spotless history report, The car with excellent battery health, the used electric car, is going to be worth more.
Yeah.
And so that's something to keep in mind.
Yeah. What is the best way to preserve battery life and maximize battery life? You know, not just over the life of the battery, but even, you know, on each individual charge. I mean, you think about the kind of weather that we're seeing this, you know, this week. That is a perfect example of kind of the angst of battery technology that many people have.
Yeah, I mean, the best way to take care of it is to charge it up infrequently. So let it keep the range within between, like, say, 90 and 20%.
Mm-hmm.
Cold weather definitely impacts the battery's performance. It may or may not impact the battery's longevity. So will take longer to charge up in very cold weather, and it might not go the number of miles you're used to in very cold weather. But part of that's because you're running the heater. I mean, in a gasoline-powered car, heat is a free resource that comes from the combustion.
Yeah.
In an electric car, that has to be created. And so that takes energy from the battery. So all those things together, you know, you can follow the owner's manual also. And also don't charge it, don't fast charge it every single time.
Right.
Every once in a while. Charging it fast charger is fine, but not every time.
What are some of the other factors you're talking about earlier? You know, some of the other things other than battery health and battery longevity that are concerning to potential EV buyers or the EV curious, as it were. What are some of the other factors that should be important to used EV buyers? What else should we be looking at?
Look at, just like with any electric car, look at where you're going to charge it up. You know, that's a big one. So thinking about this statistic that 80% of electric vehicle owners charge their car up at home, you need to ask yourself if you have that ability or not.
Mm-hmm.
Or can you have something installed? Or can another thing you can do is, if you don't have the ability to have a charger installed on your property, say you live in an apartment or a high rise or something like that,
yeah,
drive around before you buy an electric car. Drive around and see where you might charge that car up and see how crowded it is at the time of day you might go.
Mm.
Of course, you know, you can also look on apps. A lot of apps have directions to the charging station. Plus, it will say how many cars are parked there. So if there's no wait, you'll know that. But before you even get the car, drive around and see where those charging stations are. And of course, it's going to be, you know, probably open at 3 o'clock in the morning. But look and see what that's like at 2 o'clock on a weekday or 9 o'clock on a Saturday. That's something that would determine, for me, I don't think I can make this work. Or, oh, great, there's plenty of space. There's almost never anybody there.
Yeah.
That would help me personally, because it's not about range anxiety so much. The car is going to go as far as the car says it'll go.
Right.
It's more about time anxiety.
Mm.
How much time am I going to be on the hook for once I drive to my destination?
Yeah. Again, KBB Executive Editor Brian Moody with us this morning talking about some insider tips on buying used EVs, especially as those are starting to come on the market more and more and attracting those who might, you know, a new vehicle, new EV might be out of their reach, but they're becoming more affordable for the mainstream auto buyers now. And Brian, where do we get more information?
For more information, you can go to Kelly Blue Book's website, which is KBB.com. And there's a specific page that you can go to for electric cars, which is kbb.com/electric-car. And there's tons of advice, videos, and information on new and used electric vehicles.
Brian, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
It's another night of hoops on the high school hardwood. And it has been something of a rough season for the Findlay Trojans. Only one win on the year thus far. And the road does not get any easier tonight against 9-3 Perrysburg. Earlier this week on the Coach's Corner, John Marshall spoke with Findlay head coach Ryan Gross about continuing to stay positive, work hard, and move forward.
Despite some of the difficulties that have been going on, you're still seeing some positive attitude from your staff and from the guys. They're bought into the idea. It's just a matter of got to take those incremental steps to get you from where you started out to where you want to be.
Sure. And it's a choice, right? Like we talk to our guys a lot about choices, right? Every day we show up in the gym, we have a choice on our approach. The same thing, like we're struggling right now, right? It's discouraging, but we have a choice in how we're going to handle it. And so, you know, I think that's been the biggest message that our kids are, you know, trying to follow through on is that, you know, every day we come in the gym, we have a choice on our approach, on how hard we're going to work, you know, being a great teammate and continue to improve. And if you choose to do those things, you know, you hope that, you know, you get the outcome on a Friday or Saturday night in the gym. But if we don't, right, we still have to be able to look at ourselves and see, okay, did we control the things that were in front of us? And, you know, I think a lot of our kids are taking that to heart and understanding that beyond basketball, it's a little bit about life too, right? Like you always have a choice every day you get up on how you're going to approach it. And sometimes things aren't going to go your way and you can choose to let that drag you down or you can, you know, push through and, you know, continue to control the things that you control and face a little bit of adversity. And so that's been our message this year. And I think, you know, our kids are growing in that area and understanding that, you know, to be successful, right, it takes that consistency at the things you control. And so that's really been our focus.
Off to Sylvania to visit Northview in NLL play. 62-34 to the final in that one. Can you give us an overview?
Yeah, instead of the third quarter, we kind of started the game right away in a lull again. You know, they were super aggressive out of the gate, and we just didn't respond quick enough the way we needed to. You know, I think, you know, once we settled in, you know, we played him even pretty much the rest of the game, but we put ourselves in a 20-plus point hole out of the gate, just, you know, not ready to go and execute the way that we needed to. And as the game went on, we figured it out. But, you know, for the first stretch of the 8 minutes of the game, just really struggled to understand, okay, how are we going to adapt to their size and athleticism and you know, finishing plays.
Now, this Friday night, you get a visit from Perrysburg. What do they bring to the table?
Yeah, very similar to a Northview team. Actually, they've got good length, athletic guards. They're young, you know, just like Northview, just like us, trying to figure themselves out. They've got a unique zone that they run. It'll be interesting to see, you know, how much of that we see from them. But you know, our ability to adapt and find ways to score. You know, we've struggled with that throughout the year. That when teams switch up defenses on us, it takes us a while to kind of figure it out. And in the course of a game. You know, you got to be able to adapt quickly. So if they go to their zone, you know, how do we handle that offensively? And then, you know, same thing, just executing on the defensive end. I think, you know, when we get back and we're able to sit in our half-court defense, our guys are competing. We're getting better at guarding, and it's a team effort. And then, you know, like I said, usually we're outmatched size-wise, so it's continuing the battle when the shot goes up, you know, not getting out tough for loose balls and making sure that we're finishing plays by rebounding it so that we can get out and play offense.
Again, Findlay Trojan head coach Ryan Gross with John Marshall on the Coach's Corner earlier this week talking about you know, working hard, continuing to stay positive, move forward, building that program. It's been a rough season. You get the feeling that really what the Trojans need is just that one big signature win to get them over the hump and kind of validate all of that hard work and, you know, those incremental improvements that the coach talks about there. Maybe it's tonight. Who knows? Trojans hosting Perrysburg this evening. 6:45 will be airtime right here on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM. Findlay be back in action again on Tuesday, hitting the road against Anthony Wayne next. So Trojan basketball all season long right here on WFIN.
This is Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
A British woman by the name of Gill Punt. Gill Punt. From Great Britain, she has set a new world record while running a frigid marathon in Norway. She participated in the Polar Night Marathon in Tromsø, Norway, turning heads as she ran the marathon wearing a full polar bear costume. In 14-degree weather, 14 degrees. I think people to run marathons are nuts anyway. And then to do so in 14 degrees while wearing a polar bear costume. And that has earned her the title of fastest ice marathon dressed as a mammal. In the female category, though. Not in the male category. In the female category. That seems... That's the part of the story that actually caught my eye and made me chuckle a bit, because that seems like a very oddly specific record. Fastest ice marathon dressed as a mammal in the female category. That's very, very specific. By the way, her time, 4 hours, 58 minutes, and 29 seconds. And she says she is running to raise money for cancer research. So that is... It's for a good cause, but that seems like a very specific record to try and break. Fastest ice marathon dressed as a mammal in the female category. All right. But hey, holding a world record is cool. Also from the international file, the broken news this morning, a company in China has received some unwanted attention for installing cameras in the bathrooms of their workplace to shame employees who spend too much time on their bathroom breaks. So employees who spend too much time washing up were posted on a wall of shame, their photos captured by cameras in the bathroom. This is at the Lixon Electroacoustic Technology Company, and representatives admitted that the company did this to discourage time wasting at work. Spokesperson for the company says the staff were spending too much time in the bathroom smoking or playing games, which made other staff uncomfortable. But many found this as an invasion of privacy. Imagine that. An invasion of privacy. Putting cameras in the bathroom was unwelcome. Who would have thought that? But then again, remember, it's communist China. So is there really any such thing as an invasion of privacy? I mean, think about it. But cameras in the bathroom does seem like it's taking it a bit too far. Even for the communists, you know? That's a little much. Let's see here. Domestically, in the broken news, this from Provo, Utah, where a father and son have been arrested in a drug bust. Well, you know, you want to do things with your kids. You want to do things together with your kids. A little father-son bonding time. The Utah County... Major Crimes Narcotics Unit says they began an investigation after a package of carfentanil shipped from outside the U.S. to an address in Utah was intercepted by Homeland Security. The parcel reportedly contained enough of the drug for 210,000 deadly doses. Agents later took Brian Pendleton and his son Clint into custody. Other drugs, including meth and marijuana, were allegedly also found when authorities searched the Pendleton's home. So just a little father-son bonding activity there, apparently. This in Washington state, where the speaking of drug busts. This is maybe one of the most unusual drug busts you will ever hear about. In Yakima County, Washington, the county coroner is facing criminal charges after allegedly stealing illicit drugs from the dead bodies he was examining and then using them during work hours. That's all kinds of disturbing right there. The coroner was lifting drugs from the bodies he was examining and using them during work hours. The Seattle Times reports the coroner, James Curtis, is being charged with official misconduct, evidence tampering, and making false statements. Police requested criminal charges against the coroner last year after he allegedly took illicit drugs from the deceased and used them in his office during work hours. He is also facing questions regarding his investigation into the death of an inmate who died after a physical struggle with guards while he was being held at the Yakima County Jail. Records show Coroner Curtis changed the manner of death on the inmate's death certificate to accident without giving an explanation for that change. So. That is the most unusual drug bust that you will ever hear about, perhaps. The county coroner getting nailed. And lastly here in the broken news this morning, odd and unusual side of the headlines. For the first time, this is a big deal, the first time in 15 years, the rare Anorphophallus titanium, more commonly known as the corpse flower, has bloomed at the Royal Sydney Botanic Gardens in Australia. The corpse flower is in bloom. This is an endangered... We've talked about this in before, probably 15 years ago, the last time it bloomed. This is an endangered plant which produces an aroma. I mean, lots of flowers produce an aroma. Most of them are pleasant. This one is decidedly unpleasant. Produces a smell that has been compared to decaying flesh. Hence the nickname, the corpse flower. And in case you don't know what decaying flesh smells like, kind of like rotting garbage. It takes between 7 to 10 years to bloom in the wild, but this is the first time in 15 years it's been blooming at the Botanic Garden in Sydney, Australia. Believe it or not, upon news of the bloom of the corpse flower, hundreds of fans showed up to smell it for themselves before the aroma dissipates. Apparently, the lines were like 2 or 3 hours long to get a whiff of the corpse flower, said one enthusiast, quote, "I am sickened, but I am also in awe," unquote. Book your flight now, Sydney, Australia, so that you can catch the corpse flower. No, thanks. I think I'm good. Here they should send the coroner from Washington State there, from Yakima County, Washington. There you go. That is today's broken news report. An update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
I'm Paul Keels, and WFIN is your home of the Buckeyes.
Tackled by Jordan Hancock and Ohio State. National champions. Beating Notre Dame tonight, 34-23, the ninth national championship in Ohio State history.
Join WFIN Sunday for the national championship celebration at Ohio Stadium. Our coverage begins Sunday morning at 11:45.
The home of the Buckeyes, WFIN and 95.5 FM.
And now your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. Who are the most trusted people in America? Every year, the pollsters at Gallup survey people about 23 different professions. 23 professions, and they ask Americans, average Americans, if the people in those professions are honest and ethical. How much do you trust people in these professions? And it's interesting when you compare year to year of how honest and ethical people believe they are. Nurses are the most trusted people in America, the most trusted profession, nurses. Grade school teachers come in second, 61%. By the way, 3 out of 4, 75% of people think nurses are highly honest and ethical. 61% view grade school teachers highly. Military officers, pharmacists, and medical doctors also finish in the top tier. At the other end of the spectrum, lobbyists, members of Congress, and TV reporters rank as the least trusted professions, with more than half of those surveyed saying low ethics are a hallmark of those professions. Low ethics. Police officers, clergy, and judges are somewhere in the middle, but still viewed more positively than negatively overall. Bankers, lawyers, and business executives are ranked close by, although they have a more negative view than positive. So slightly underwater, if you will. From the time that Gallup started rating all 23 professions back in the early 2000s through this year, there has been a 26-point decline in the perceived honesty and ethics of clergy. That is the biggest decline of any group. Although in the past 3 years, medical doctors have experienced the biggest decline in trust, falling 14 points from 2021 to 2024. Might have something to do with, you know, kind of the effects of the pandemic and everything that went along with that. Auto mechanics are the lone profession experiencing improved ratings since the early 2000s, rising from 24% during the first part of the of the 2000s to 33% today. Auto mechanics are the only profession experiencing trust growth over that period. Kind of interesting. I would not have guessed that. As is traditional, my wife Kyra has joined us in the studio for another collection of recipes from Kyra's Kitchen. It's been a while since we've actually done this on a Friday. Last week it was on Thursday because we were here on Friday. Right. And it just seems like it's been forever. Yep. I was mentioning a little bit earlier that, you know, it's the 24th of January, so Christmas was just 1 month ago. Doesn't it seem like Christmas is like forever ago?
Yeah.
It seems like it was forever ago. Time usually flies, but it... Yeah. Just seems
it
like it's been
forever.
It does
seem like it's been a little while.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
it's
anyway.
All this cold weather.
Yeah, that may be it. Yeah. I'm not sure. Anyway, we've got another collection of recipes from Kyra's Kitchen, and these would be good for a cold day like today.
Most definitely.
We start with a recipe for smothered chicken with jack cheese.
Yes. So this is 2 large chicken breasts, 1 tablespoon of minced garlic, 1 tablespoon of smoked paprika, 2 tablespoons of soy sauce, 1 medium onion cut into quarter inch slices, 1 tablespoon of lemon juice, 2 teaspoons of Worcestershire sauce, 1/2 pound of button mushrooms sliced, 1 tablespoon of butter, salt and pepper to taste, 2 slices of Monterey Jack cheese, and 1 tablespoon of olive oil. So start by preparing your chicken breast. If they're particularly thick, you might want to pound them. I got the thin sliced chicken and used that. This ensures that they cook evenly in a bowl. And then combine the soy sauce, the lemon juice, the Worcestershire sauce, the minced garlic, and the smoked paprika. Place the chicken breasts in the marinade. Let them sit for about 30 minutes. The longer, the better. So if you have time in the morning and want to do it, go for it.
All right.
Yeah. And it'll just make them taste even yummier. While your chicken is marinating, heat your olive oil in a skillet over medium heat. Add the sliced onions. Saute them until they're just beginning to soften, about 3 to 4 minutes. Next, throw in your mushrooms. Cook until both vegetables are tender and slightly caramelized. Set them aside. In the same skillet, add a bit of butter. Let it melt over medium-high heat. Place your marinated chicken into the skillet. Cook for about 5 to 7 minutes on each side or until fully cooked. Season with salt and pepper. Once your chicken is about done, place a slice of your cheese on each of the chicken breasts. Cover the skillet with a lid for about 1 to 2 minutes. That just allows that that cheese to kind of melt and get gooey all over. Mm-hmm. Then top each of your chicken breasts with your sauteed onions and mushrooms. Let everything sit for just another few minutes and then enjoy.
Mm, good stuff.
Yes.
The smothered chicken with jack cheese there. To go along, we have cheesy mashed potatoes. A lot of cheese.
Cheesy mashed potato puffs. Yes.
Not just mashed potatoes, mashed potato puffs. Yes.
So this is 3 cups of chilled mashed potatoes. So if you have leftover mashed potatoes, or if you just get a thing of already made mashed potatoes at the store, either will work. 1 large egg, 1 cup of shredded cheddar cheese, 1/4 cup of chopped chives, 1/4 cup of all-purpose flour, 1/2 teaspoon of garlic powder, salt and pepper to taste, and 1/4 cup of grated Parmesan cheese for rolling. So prepare your oven to 400 degrees and grease your mini muffin pan with your cooking spray or butter. Then in a large bowl, mix the chilled mashed potatoes, your egg, shredded cheese, chives, flour, garlic powder, salt and pepper. Mix that all together until it's well blended. Roll the mixture into 1-inch balls, like what you do for your like cookies and that type of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then roll each of them in the grated Parmesan cheese to coat. Then place the coated potato balls into your cavities of each of your muffin pan. Gently press down to form a little puff shape. It's going to kind of look like a little cupcake. Bake for 15 to 20 minutes or until the puffs are golden brown, crisp on the outside. Let them cool just for a few minutes before removing them from the pan. That way they don't fall apart.
Mm-hmm.
And then serve warm and enjoy.
Mm-hmm. So
and this is good dipped in ranch.
Okay.
Yes.
So mashed potato puffs.
Yes.
Cheesy mashed potato puffs or mashed potato muffins.
Yes.
Almost. And then for dessert, we have a Biscoff fluff.
Yes. So this is 4 ounces of cream cheese at room temperature, 1 cup of marshmallow fluff, 3/4 cup of creamy Biscoff cookie butter, 2 tablespoons of milk, 1 teaspoon of vanilla extract, 4 ounce whipped topping thawed, 6 Biscoff cookies, smashed into crumbs, plus more for garnishment. And then the others you can use for your dipping. 1/2 cup of mini chocolate chips, plus more for garnishment. Your dippers can be your cookies, graham crackers, pretzels, strawberries, apple slices, any of those kinds of yummy things. So in a large bowl with an electric mixer, beat your cream cheese and smooth until it's smooth and creamy. Then add in your marshmallow cream and cookie butter. Beat on medium until well combined. Add your milk and your vanilla. Beat on low until well combined. Using a rubber spatula, fold in your Cool Whip and your crushed cookies and your mini chocolate chips until everything is nice and incorporated, and it'll be nice and fluffy. Cover and chill in your refrigerator for a couple hours. Let it stand on the counter for just a few minutes to soften it up. Give it a stir and transfer to a pretty bowl if you like, or if not, just start dipping.
Just start dipping.
Yeah, garnish with some mini chocolate chips and enjoy your choice of dippers.
Yeah, so no baking involved in that. So that would be great, not just for now, but you know, maybe when the weather turns warmer and you're looking for something easy and something sweet.
Sweet and salty.
So the recipes for the smothered chicken with jack cheese, the cheesy mashed potato puffs, and the Biscoff fluff are all on the Kyra's Kitchen Facebook page, right? At Kyra's Kitchen WFIN on Facebook. We also have it linked up at our webpage at goodmornings.net if you want those recipes. And if you don't follow Kyra's Kitchen, the Kyra's Kitchen Facebook page, you can follow the page, get all of the recipes each week and lots of other fun stuff as well. And if there's anything that you would like to share, add to these recipes, maybe you're going to switch it up a little bit, you got a way to improve it or
yes.
You know, whatever, share that.
Have great ideas, let us know.
On the Facebook page as well, something that you would like to share, your favorite recipe or something like that. Again, that's the place, at Kyra's Kitchen, WFIN, on Facebook. My wife, Kyra, thanks very much.
You're welcome.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program this morning. Remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage. And once again, that is goodmornings.net. Coming up Monday on the program, Americans are backtracking financially. The latest Bankrate report finds that fewer of us are prepared for an emergency and perhaps are unrealistic about how we could afford an unexpected expense. We'll dig into the numbers. So until Monday morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day, a great weekend. We'll catch you back here next week.